October 6, 2021, SWAT for Pedro Show. for Pedro Show. Happy Wednesday. Start off the show with Four. This is live in 1958, John Coltrane with Miles Davis. Then we had Chain from Matt Crafton. And because of those Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention, I have Matt Crafton with me. Welcome aboard, Matt.
Happy to be here, Matt. I'm honored.
Okay, I want to learn about your journey through music, brother. Please bring your earliest musical memory.
Yeah. You know, earliest one I can remember is almost like my parents had that, it's a humpback whale record. And I remember when I was a little kid thinking that was the coolest thing. So it's more like a record memory than a music memory. It was like a journey into sound in that sense,
yeah,
sort of imagining what those whales.
But I think nature and whales, and that's music too. Maybe they ain't human music, but I mean, it's very important to those cats. That's how they find
their... Oh, for sure. I mean, and that's, you know, that's...
That's how they find their mates.
Yes. Right, and what's more important than that?
Yeah, absolutely, mm-hmm. Absolutely. We got them off of Pedro here, even blues, the biggest ones in the world, but a lot of grays, a lot of right, humpback. And they come up from Mexico. Yeah, they migrate, right? They bring their kids up and then bring them back on the summer and the winter. And between near Catalina Island, you know, sometimes on the other side, so they stay clear of the boats because it is dangerous. So in this pad you grew up, Matt, was there musical instruments?
Oh, my dad had a banjo in the attic that I ended up finding after a while, but the one that was sort of accessible to us as kids was they had this big, clunky Yamaha keyboard, which I still have in the next room. And me and my little brother used to like to go on it and find the alien settings, and we would just play around with these blinks and bloops and things like that. And then eventually my little brother got a electric guitar, and when everybody would leave the house, I would go play his electric guitar and record it on cassettes and play around with the cassettes. So it was kind of learning by osmosis in that sense.
Whose keyboard was that?
It was my parents.
Okay.
My parents had this big Yamaha keyboard just kind of for show in a way. Nobody ever played it, but we would mess around with it.
Sure, weird
sounds, yeah.
And then you got a hold of your little brother's guitar, and you kind of self-teach yourself? What do you listen to records, try to figure out songs?
Yeah, well, it was more like at that point, by the time he was playing guitar, my older had gotten me into Sonic Youth and the Minutemen, actually. And, you know, we would go see you when you come to New York. And so I was kind of interested in the outer edges of what Sonic Youth was doing. So I was trying to approximate some of those feedback sounds and would record them on cassettes. And then tried this really crude way of multitracking, but I had no idea how to do that. So it was two boom boxes just playing cassettes at the same time, which is actually what I do with my music these days. So it was a formative experience that I refined over the years.
Could I ask you about school? Were you in the marching band or the choir or shit like that?
You know, it was probably fourth grade and fifth grade, maybe sixth grade too. I did play saxophone in the school band.
Alto, tenor?
Alto, yeah, alto, which is another instrument that I still have, and even though I didn't retain much of the skills, I still use it to produce sounds, and you know, I always keep it handy because I love the saxophone. I don't know how to play it in a traditional way, but I like to listen to a lot of saxophone music, and then I like to do whatever I can to use it in my own music. Yeah,
you use it like as a source for sounds, right?
Sure. Yeah. Even a little bit in the last couple of years, my friends in Idea Fire Company knew that I had it, so I've been trying to and we've been trying to do this kind of self-taught horn ensemble. So I've been, without knowing exactly what I'm doing, again, play it in more of a band context, actually, for the last few years, which has been fun to...
Can I ask you the
first... ...myself something that I used to know as a little kid...
Can I ask you, what was the first record you bought with your own money?
first record I bought with my own money. But, you know, there's probably something before this, but I was going back through the memory bank and couldn't figure it out. I think I ordered a bunch of hip-hop CDs from BMG Music Service. And so I got, like, Dr. Dre and Tupac and The Far Side. And my parents took away Dr. Dre and Tupac because they had the parental advisory on the cover. But the far side, it was when you got it in the stores, they had a sticker advisory on it. But if you got it through the mail, the sticker wasn't on it. So I was able to scoot that one by them. So, yeah.
And what was the first gig you went and saw, Matt?
Oh, boy. That's another one I can't quite. I think the first one, to be honest, was Sting. And then shortly thereafter, I saw the Allman Brothers Band, who I liked immeasurably more than Sting. Yeah.
And what about after school?
Still love it.
Not graduating, but in the afternoon, did you do the basement band, the bedroom band, the garage band?
You know, my little brother and I, the one whose guitar I would abscond with, he and I had a project that we called Society of, that was just the two of us. And I had one of those plastic pumpkins that you'd take around, get Halloween candy and stuff. And we used that as a drum. I would play the drum and sing these songs that we made up, and he would play guitar. And that kind of became an actual project that we did for years. And we made cassettes and put them in the local record store and started playing at like high school events and things like that. We even played some gigs in the local record store. Our buddy Eric let us.
You were playing
play some
a
shows there, so that
playing,
was a.
You were playing a plastic pumpkin.
Yeah. I would throw change and stuff in it and shake it, if you put it up to the microphone, you could make it sound pretty big, like it was an actual drum kit, but it was just a plastic pumpkin.
Yeah, are you using a pewter or are you using a leash to talk to me? It keeps dropping out. Kind of fucked up connection.
Oh, sorry. I'm using a. I can unplug this thing and see if I.
No, that's okay. I was just wondering. Sometimes pewter. Okay. It just depends on your internet connection, you know, and some of the words drop out, so that.
Right.
I want everybody to hear what you're trying to say, and so this band was called Society.
Society of Friends, like the Quakers.
Society of Friends,
really
right,
know
right,
about the
absolutely.
Quakers.
See, that word friends got cut
yeah.
out, so I didn't get to hear it. Okay, so Society of Friends, and because you didn't send me any Society of Friends music.
No, but because it's all on cassettes. I would have to digitize that stuff and find it.
And, might be interesting, though.
Yeah, I mean, I gave one of the tapes to Byron Coley when I first met him. The only thing I had.
Byron Coley, a very important individual.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, he lived in SoCal for a while and wrote for the Reader. I think he was the first guy to get Minutemen into the Reader. A great cat. So he actually has Society Friends cassette?
Yeah. He has one of the very first ones, yeah.
Then I got to write him and see if he'll digitize it or let me do it. I'll do it. Fuck. I would love to hear this stuff. So
okay.
Can you remember the first right. Society of Friends gig?
Yes. This would have been at a sort of high school open mic situation, and we managed to commandeer about 20 minutes and do, you know, we had weird songs about soda and movies, and we wrote songs about other kids in high school.
Of course.
And, yeah.
You know, you gave me some music
top
here.
Stuff.
You gave me this thing that you credit to yourself. It's called Untitled, but in parentheses, Split Banter. So let's listen.
Thank you. Rain down from the sky. I like my face so much I wear it every day. And I've come to appreciate this smile. Won't you kiss it slowly and tell me if I'm old? Read these songs you've written on my mind. And I am just an image till you smudge me. And you're a movie that I touch. Trading these messages for an ending. Why don't we kill this feeling? Interrupted 27 times or more by the details trapped beneath your lips. A machine protecting its own vulnerable cause from your story mixing with my myth. And I am just an image till you smudge me. And you're a that I touch, trading these messages for an ending. Why don't we kill this feeling with our love?
We go Watch for Pedro show. We start off that chunk of music with Matt Crafton. Untitled, but in parentheses, Split Banner. Like some spiel people. Then from Victoria Shen, Clock 1 RPM Turntables Played by Bose. You know, this lady not only makes music, but she makes the machine she makes the music with. One RPM turntable.
Right.
Okay, that's one turn a minute. Okay, it's kind of slow. And the bow, she's trying to get me to, I got a e-bow, now I'm trying to learn how to use it, because I want to do some arco on a bass guitar. I'll get wax all over the fucking string. Gabby went after that brand new, I dare you to arrest me right now, out of Oaktown. SLWCC Watt, that's Sam Locke, Ward, myself, Proj, Iowa City, Pedro Connect. This Cottage Road, then Moomsel and Momsel, up in the city. No Way to Say Goodbye, Leonard Cohen. Interpretation, one of his, an excerpt, of course. Mother and daughter. Up Around the Sun, Tim Curtis Proj out of Austin. Well, he's actually in Mallorca now doing some art. Tim Kerr's been really on the art, but he's going way back to the big boys, right? And this is Acoustic Proj. Follow the Sun. No, Follow the Buffalo from Up on the Sun. Andre Vita out of Berlin with Just an Image. Bomas Prendon, The Empire of Trees. Ryan James Mabe, Inner Light. Brand new from Bob Pollard. Guided by Voices, My Limited Engagement. And finally, Matt Crafton with The Masks. So, Matt, how long does the Society of Friends go?
Oh, boy. I mean, it's my brother, so the band never breaks up. We still talk about doing something, but, you know, we don't really do that much music once I left the house and went to college. So we probably played, regularly for 3-4 years.
And did you go to college?
Did a reunion of sorts in No, go ahead.
Did you go to college for music?
You know, I went to Hampshire College in Amherst, Massachusetts.
Right, Mass.
I did a little bit of everything. I wrote about music a lot. And in our free time, me and my friends, with whom I formed this group, Son of Earth, we just put on shows all the time. When we weren't in class, we were booking gigs in the tavern, which was equally as much education as anything in the classroom. So.
Okay, you gave me some Son of Earth, but. You gave me some Son of Earth, but we ain't going to play it till the third hour. I didn't know the chronology, so I thought, yeah, I'll put the Matt Crafton stuff first.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. So how did Son of Earth, you and your buddies that you went to school with, how'd that get going?
Actually, Aaron Rosenblum and I went to high school together, and then we both went to Hampshire together, and then this other guy on the floor I lived, John, he was, John Shaw, who actually now plays with the Magic Markers, we were all kind of into the same stuff, and we had some instruments and just started whacking on them, and again, we just put ourselves down for an open mic night, and they didn't know what the hell it was, and then we would just make a bunch of racket in the room, and that kind of became more and more like a thing, and we could book ourselves shows. You know, if we were booking shows for other bands, we would just put ourselves on as the opener. And so we did a lot of growing up in public, as Lou Reed says.
Right, I remember that album.
Just sort of learned on the stage. Yeah.
Not a lot of good songs on that album. I know that album.
Yeah.
Right? My Old Man, right? He's got this song about his pop, right? My Old Man.
Yeah.
Look.
Amazing.
How did you know what instrument to play in Son of Earth?
Well, I got a hold of a guitar. It was sort of whatever was at hand, really. I mean, we'd go to the thrift store even and buy suitcases and bang on suitcases. We would buy suitcases and use those as improvising instruments. We really kind of just built it from the ground up. And we had a few guitars and guitar pedals and stuff like that. We, you know, really kind of just built our own music out of whatever we had around.
Was there a bass?
There was a bass, actually. John Shaw had a bass that he had borrowed from a friend of his. Yeah.
Okay, I was worried. Now, you didn't play a whole track, kid. It was just playing Suitcases and Plastic Pumpkins?
Right.
Okay. Because I was thinking of that lonely kick drum, but I guess you didn't have that one. So, where did you get the name Son of Earth?
Well, God, what was this movie called Begotten, which was, I forget the director's name, but it was an experimental film. And this was the guy, and his next movie was kind of a big Hollywood thing with Willem Dafoe playing Max Schreck about the Nosferatu thing. But this was his first film, and the director, Son of Earth, Flesh on Bone, which was this guy who just twitched on the ground. And we were watching the credits, and we thought Son of Earth, Flesh on Bone was such a sort of funny phrase that we called ourselves Son of Earth, Flesh on Bone Trio, and then eventually shortened it to Son of Earth from there.
So it's a cinematic reference.
Right.
And you're big with films?
Yeah. You know, yeah, I love films. Before I was, I mean, that's, films is sort of what got me into music, really.
Oh, really?
Like, I mean, Eraserhead was huge for me because the sound was so weird, and that was also, and then they had these little Fats Waller bits.
Yeah.
And so I like Fats Waller, and so I went and bought a Fats Waller record, and then I was like, oh, I like jazz. So then I went and got Love Supreme was where I went after that. So it was like somehow Eraserhead got me into cult.
Now that soundtrack to Eraserhead was by a guy named Peter Ivers. And I met this man because he had this show, a cable access show called New Wave Theater, and the Minutemen was one of his guests.
Oh, wow.
And it was such a trip. The guy was wearing...
Amazing.
He was wearing see-through plastic lime green cowboy boots. He had a little... his t-shirt tore up with a little thing put back with safety pins that said, "Is there life on Mars?" And he asked D. Boone, after we played him a few songs, and then he said, "Okay, what's the fascist scene like in Pedro?" And D. Boone looked at him and he goes, "You've never been to Pedro." You know, it was the most bizarre situation. And the man was horribly murdered. It was terrible. But he made that soundtrack. He also made a Peter Ivers solo record. That it's kind of new wavy and it's really trippy. But, really sad about him. That soundtrack, I mean, a lot of white noise, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that movie was disturbing, man. Look, the Jack Nance looked a lot like Jack Brewer from Sacred Trust. And he was murdered terribly at a donut shop. Yeah, weird things about that movie, man.
Yeah, it's a major.
Yeah, it was, and you know, what I got out of that movie was like, no matter how clean and smooth something looks far away, you get up close enough, you're going to see the filth. You're going to see the fuck-ups.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Big time.
In heaven, everything is fine.
But also a lot of beauty in it, too.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
A lot of beauty in the
You got nuance, yours, man. And you got mine. Yeah, but when he's, like, fucking looking in that radiator and that fucking mossy-ass shit. Oh, my God. Oh, the little fetus is fucking falling on the deck. And, oh, my God. That movie freaked me out. It was intense. But, you know, I understand about the connect between movies and music, and not just soundtrack wise, but I kind of write my songs like they were little movies. Going back to first minute,
right? Yeah.
Stuff.
Yeah, like there's a narrative aspect that I really picked up on. You know, like sounds tell stories, and you know, songs tell stories too, and this is so like kind of narrative thing that's sort like a that floats through a bunch of my music has always been important for me, and I think I got that from having film sort of be my first love, and then that, you know, music won in the end. If not that there's a battle going on, but yeah, they're very related for me.
Look, we're at the end of the first hour, October 6, 2021, edition of Wapito's special guest, Matt Crafton. Hold tight for hour two. October 6, 2021. It's the second hour of Watt for Pedro show.
Bye. Thank you.
undiscovered country. I can't get through. Am I doing the right thing? Did I make the right choice in you? You never hesitate. You are fearless. I'm a cemetery. I'm an illusion cobbled together. Burning at the stake. You're the voices in my head. I suppose it's the punishment I deserve, if I deserve any. Now there's a word. Now there's a word. Now there's a word. I'm no longer interested in.
Thank you.
Swat for Pedro Show. We start off the second hour. Man in Revolt, Part 1. Matt Crafton. Then Ben Salter out of Tasmania with Exit. Stark after that. Better Class 11. Maybe a Dutch band. This guy found the master tapes for after 30 years. He's real happy to get it to me. Matt Crafton, High Hopes, Part 1. So I got two pieces of music from you here, Part 1s. They're both Part 1s.
Yes.
Okay. So, you know, promising beginnings, you know? So is this like a continuation of what you were doing as a teenager with the cassette machine as a, like kind of a musical instrument?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, especially the High Hopes one, that's a record I actually did for Bill Mace's label, Open Mouth. And that's just me with two tape machines, varying sources. And that one's live. That's just playing tapes live.
You need that.
And the other one, Man in Revolt, at a what?
A gig, live. Performance.
Live. No, it's not at a gig. It's a live performance that's just captured in the moment. There's no
overdubs. Okay.
Like production. It's just two sessions.
Okay.
Gotcha.
And what were you going to say about Man in Revolt?
Oh, that one is actually me playing. I was house-sitting for Bryn Colton and Lily Dwight and recorded on their piano. For hours, and that's another cassette that there's one overdub on that thing, but recording with some tape hiss as far as I remember. It's a long time ago.
Yeah, and what is your connect with Bill? How did you first meet Bill Nace?
Bill, I met when I moved up here in 99, Western Massachusetts, quickly with a bunch of like-minded people. I probably didn't meet Bill until 2000, but there's a pretty fertile community here of people who make all kinds of off-the-wall music, and that was a really potent time too. So in quick succession I met Chris Corsano, Byron and Lily, Kim and Thurston, Bill, John Trzynski.
Matt, Jake, those are dudes that have just been on the show.
Yeah, right.
That's great. So you guys, right away you met this like circle of cats. Very fortunate, right?
Yeah, it was an amazing time. I mean, I really felt lucky. I'm still here. 22 years later, I didn't leave the area because it was my people are here, you know. Scott Faust and Carla Borecki from Idea Fire Company were really good friends of mine and been playing with them for years. Michael Ayler's still here doing Aramite records, and so we saw amazing free jazz shows before I even knew where I was. So we knew Sunburn guys who were always around. Sunburn had the man.
John Maloney?
Matt Valentine. Yep, John and I were roommates. And Rob, Valentine and Erica Elder were here. It's a very Dread Fool, Dan Iredon and Pat Iredon. The list goes on and on.
So, okay, you gave me some music here. You gave me some music here, a collaboration with Orlana Flynn called Girl. I want to play that, okay?
Thank you.
Watt for Pedro Show. That chunk of music started off with Matt Crefton, Orlana Flynn doing Girl, then the Ophelias, brand new from them, Sacrificial Lamb, Headboggle from his new album, Dobro Especial. Actually, this is the record before, but he does have a new album. Fucked up, Watt. And then another collab, but this time he puts Rick Myers first. Rick Myers and Matt Crefton with Untitled. Tell me about both these collaborations, Matt.
Sure. The first one with Olana was pretty recent. That my friend Dennis Typhus was doing an art show, and he wanted to have a jukebox full of Beatles covers. So he sent out a call to hundreds of people, asked Olana. Olana's a dancer and a choreographer who also does music, and is my significant other as well. But we recorded the Beatles song Girl using keyboards and garden tools.
Of course.
And we sent that in. Right. And that was it. So that was in hundreds of Beatles covers in Antwerp. in his gallery. And the one with Rick is a LP that just came out. We used an old on turntable that belonged to my grandmother and has a sort of music box function. And Rick's mostly a conceptual visual artist, but he's done sound and writing as well. So that's me and him in his studio mess disc and box, playing some cassettes along with it as well in real time.
Okay, and it was just beyond having a title. I mean,
every other track on that record has a title, and I sent you the one without a title.
Yeah, but how important are titles to you, Matt?
They're more important than it would than seem from all the untitled things that I have here. I really like matching them up. I like trying to match up words with what they remind me of.
And if they don't get a title, they don't remind you of anything?
No, it's not. It's more like they're the ones that stay totally mysterious sometimes, I guess.
Yeah, they're music,
there's
right?
No bringing them back.
Like, if you wanted words, you would use the words.
Right.
You wouldn't use music. I understand.
Yeah, that's
me and D. Boone had this joke about going into art gallery and the description of the painting is like 10 times bigger than the painting.
Yeah, exactly.
Mind us, that first Wire record, Pink Flag, you know, the way they put their words out like that? That's what it reminded us of. And so we tried to do the same thing with the punchline. And so Georgie, to make the painting, he gets a clock, an Econo electric alarm clock, and breaks it up and then puts spray paint over it. So that's us Minutemen trying to be artistic.
Right.
Actually, D. Boone was a painter, because the cover of that punchline, it was actually like fucking, I don't know, 8 feet by 6 foot. It was huge. And I go, damn, D. Boone, we're going to lose something if we shrink this down. He says, don't worry. And he gets a knife. He puts a record cover up there, and he traces the knife. He goes, this looks like the most interesting part anyway. And he cuts his big square out. And that ended up the cover. And I think I was supposed to be the yellow color. Georgie was the blue color, and he was the red color. He says, this is an abstract version of the Minutemen.
Amazing.
I don't think I ever told it. Maybe I told somebody that before. But, yeah, that was actually, it's a 1 foot square patch out of a 6x8 fucking huge-ass painting he did. That was some kind of.
Holy shit.
He said he was trying to make a painting that had the feeling of struggle.
Right.
And because the punchline actually came from a cartoon from Raymond Pettibone. Yeah, where he had some...
Okay.
Yeah, he had some skeleton acting like he was a stand-up comic. And it said, death is the real punchline. And so what I did, I took a picture of some Soviet and U.S. soldiers shaking hands near the end of the Second World War. And I put punchline... Raymond has taught me so much. D. Boone, Georgie, you know, I'm really a product of the cats I was with. So that's, you know what I mean? Like you like to surround yourself with creative people, right?
I was very lucky for that.
Same here. Yeah. Very, very lucky. You know, when you think about stuff like that, you wonder what you would have been like man alone, right? Because even when I made that solo record in 95, there was 48 other dudes on that record.
It's true.
Look, we're at the end of the second hour.
A million people in it.
Yeah. Kathleen Hanna. October 6th, 2021 edition of Walk Peters with special guest Matt Crefton. Hold tight for hour three.
Okay.
October 6th, 2021. It's the third hour of the Watch for Pedro show. Walker Pedro Show. We start off the third hour. And here's that group Matt was enlightening us to him beginning when he moved out to West Mass. Son of Earth with Incorrect Posture. Beautiful title. Babes New York City. Worst band name ever. But tune's okay. People Don't Want to Be. And then again, Son of Earth. Al's Victor Speech. Vector Speech. Vector people like mosquitoes, right? Bringing you all that malaria. I heard of malaria vaccines coming out. You know, now there's a chance for anti-vaxxers to get that shit, too.
Right.
Malaria killed a lot of cats. Dante, right? Dante Alighieri died of malaria. A lot. I think Caravaggio. Caravaggio. Crazy motherfucker, but could fucking pain, huh? Little boy getting bit by a lizard. What a fucking trippy pain. Yeah. Salome and all that shit. He knew how to use light technique. You listen to other cats that make music with cassettes and stuff like that. Anybody been an inspiration to you, Matt?
You know, when I first heard Alvin Lucier's piece, I Am Sitting in a Room.
I say his I name again. Really his name checking. Dropped out. His name dropped out. Say his name again.
Okay. Alvin Lucier.
Alvin Lucier. I got who it.
Used to teach at Wesleyan, but feedback piece called that.
Did you know him personally?
No. I saw him speak once, but mostly it was just his record and realizing that it was very similar to what I had been doing in my bedroom and kind of gave me as a technique, feeding cassettes into one another as feedback agents.
Did you know
I was a big fan too of William Burroughs tape cut-ups.
Loved those. Were you aware of Al Margolis and his cassette kind of network?
I am now, but not when I started doing the stuff. No,
he ain't too far away. He's in Chester, New York.
Yeah,
and this was like this was kind of an '80s thing, and then in the '90s he went into like a CD Pogum or something. But I'm just learning about this stuff too. I didn't know about it in the moment, but obviously because a lot of these artists, this was the main way of connecting. It's pre-internet.
Right.
And the way we used cassettes...
Yeah, for sure.
The way we used cassettes was to turn each other onto, records. There wasn't a lot of these records around, right, of the punk movement and stuff. And so that's how we knew. We didn't really think of them as being their own kind of medium, way of doing the music. We did stumble onto that, and me and D. Boone had a label called New Alliance, and we put out two compilations where the songs had to come off a cassette, but they weren't made with cassette. That was just the medium. They were, one was called Mighty Feeble, and one was called Feeble Efforts.
Yeah.
You might be aware of them.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, in a way, you were just Man Alone. So, later on, you found out about this stuff.
Yeah, and it was, and then I found out about it pretty young. I was in my early 20s, but by then I developed some of these practices, and it was good to hear that it had a history, and that I could learn a bunch of new stuff I didn't know before. There's all kinds of, there's still records we've heard that are mind blowing, weird ass things that I'm still finding. So yeah.
And now we know about Byron Coley knows about every fucking record that's ever been pressed. Incredible knowledge, that man.
Yeah.
Okay.
I learned it from him and
You gave me this stuff called Dead Girls Party.
Ah.
What's that about?
I did. Yeah. That is me. That's another guy. Another guy that I learned a ton from is this fellow Scott Faust, who lives in Amherst. He and his wife Carla Barecki, and I started going over there in 2001, I think, became friends. And every record that Byron might not know, knows. Amazing. It's just education. And he and I ended up doing this project together, that girl party, where I played keyboards and sort of sang, and Scott played guitar, and we did some, you know, some overdubs and stuff. But that's the story with this one. I'm doing singing, and
okay, let's
Scott's
listen
playing
to
guitar.
The things I've thrown away.
Blinding light of day. long, deep sex is wrong. Where has nature gone?
Pedro Show, last music for this edition. Started that chunk off with Dead Girl's Party, The Things Are Thrown Away. Then ID du Femel, The Portrait of a Vagabond. I think this is from a cassette recorded in the 80s in kind of Spain. I think it's Spain. Kind of underground scene. And then finally, Deliver the Future from the Believers. What's the Believers about, Matt?
Man, all right. So the Believers appropriate that this comes Blast. That was, I played bass in that band.
Yes.
and that was a college project with me, my friend John Shaw, and son of John's now wife, Anna, playing drums, and our friend Jesse was the singer. And the idea there was that we had to do, all of us had to play instruments that we didn't know how to play, but we had to try as hard as we could. And we, you know, the idea wasn't to be a crap, but we also didn't know what we were doing. So that's kind of how that happened.
Like you built in the naive quotient.
Right, because it was, you know, that's the kind of thing people can manufacture a little, you know, easily sometimes. Comes off as trite and least possible. And that was our, it was, a, you know, I love that band. It went for 5 or 6, you know, not even that long, maybe just 4 years, but we took it really seriously, and then it kind of burnt itself out. But when it was good, I think.
So you played bass for 5-6 years?
Yeah, in there. You know, it's totally self-taught. He played guitar, and we would try to come up with riffs together that sounded okay, even though we didn't really know what we were doing. And, you know, kept it. We still don't know what to call any of the notes, but we figured out how we could play together and turned it into a rock band. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, it's sound coming out of the speakers. You don't know how it's made. I'm talking about
That's right.
The listener, right? Yeah. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. Now, Matt, you said you wrote about music. Do you see a connection between writing music and making music?
Oh, boy. I think when I write about it, I try to listen really hard. So I think it comes down to listening, you know, and I think that's a core component of both. I don't know that anything like comes out in the way that I make music, although there's got to be out there. It's probably below the surface of my consciousness, but they both teach you to listen, which is an important skill.
Absolute, absolute. If you're going to make sound, you better listen, learn to listen to sound. And what's your next plan musically?
I've actually got some DJ gigs coming up. But that's just sort of local stuff. And I'm working on it. Oh, you know what, Bill? I have a duo record. Me and Bill Mace have a duo record in the can that's coming out.
Can you tell us about it?
And
what's it looking like?
Sure. Yeah, sure. Again, I'm using cassettes and Bill's using his guitar and his pedals, but we based off of Bill's guitar, and basically we just run these loops into the ground or into the stratosphere, I guess, however you want to.
You say Bill goes first, and then you react to what he brings you.
A little bit. I did this one. Bill made some sounds and looped them, and then I took those and looped those, and then we played them. You know, we played them together. So
interesting.
It's a little bit like a game of chess. Yeah.
And how soon?
Early next year is what they're telling us. No pressing.
Oh yeah, the pressing plans are backed up.
I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
But
it's like the head on the Enterprise with Scotty. You know, he tried using the photon plunger, but it's backed up into the warp drives. You know, what did they find? Speaking of that show, what did they find in the captain's head?
Man. Damn to find them.
The captain's log.
Ah.
Got you, Matt. It's been a big honor. Look, when you guys get this album out, why don't you and Bill why don't you and Bill both come on the show and we'll play the whole thing and talk about it?
Oh, it sounds great.
That'd be beautiful.
Hey, man, I love
that'd be beautiful. And a big honor to have you aboard, Matt. Thank you so much. Keep on keeping on, please, brother.
No.
Okay, people, right, we'll it's do. Been October 6, 2021 edition of WAP Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.